City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.
Talk to Tricia on City Talk 105.9.
Since 1988, the 1st of December has been designated World AIDS Day. Well, tomorrow, as in previous years, the media will join with charities and medical professionals to raise awareness and fight the prejudice that still surrounds HIV and AIDS. It's estimated that there are now around 33.2 million people living with HIV, including 2.5 million children. Now, according to figures released this week by the Health Protection Agency, the number of people in the UK with HIV rose by 6% last year. There are now over 77,000 people with the condition, and almost a third of them may not even know they have the virus. Ewan Jenkins runs the Terence Higgins Trust office on the Wirral and works through the Northwest with people who have HIV. And we've talked to Ewan before. But Ewan, let's start talking about these figures. What do they mean?
I think what it means is that we're seeing year on year a continued increase in the number of people who are both diagnosed with and living with HIV in the UK. And really, the high-level message around it has got to be that HIV has not gone away. HIV does not have a cure. There's no vaccine for it. And so this is why we have World AIDS Day, so that we can raise awareness with every single person around HIV and let them know that it's still there and it's not going away.
Now, Ewan, you said every single person. There still is that stereotype that the person most likely to fall foul of HIV is the gay, single, promiscuous man. But I think, were there some figures within that, those recently released, that suggested people should wake up to the fact that that is a dangerous stereotype?
Well, it is. I think that if you look at the total number, that there's different routes by which we can capture information on how people have come to have HIV. Mm. And I think that one of the things that's really important to know is that actually the number of people that have acquired HIV through heterosexual sex is greater than the number of people that acquire it through gay sex.
That's sobering thought, isn't it?
It is. And I think that, you know, it's really unfortunate, and it is quite a difficult message for people to hear sometimes, because it does disproportionately affect gay men. It does disproportionately affect people from African communities. Mm. But I have personal knowledge, personal contact and personal experience of working with people from just about every single walk of life. You know, from young, white, heterosexual women who have left school with absolutely no knowledge around HIV, who've been unfortunate in the fact that they have picked it up on their first or second sexual encounter, right through to people, you know, who are in their 60s and 70s, who are not thought of as people being at risk of HIV, and are being diagnosed with HIV very, very late on, and that's causing significant health problem for them. So it can and it does affect anybody and everybody.
Yeah. How clued up do you think the people on Merseyside are when it comes to sexual health in general?
That's a very difficult question to answer. I mean, I think that I would always argue that I think that people could be more clued up around their sexual health, particularly in relation to HIV. I mean, I think if you kind of take it sort of slightly out of the HIV equation, one of the things that young people are being made very well aware of at the moment, because there's huge work and huge amounts of money being put into it, is chlamydia.
Yes.
But if you look at that, it's like chlamydia does not exist in a vacuum when it comes to sexual health. Young people that we speak to in Terence Higgins Trust, who we're offering chlamydia screening to, they want to know about HIV. And we don't just talk to them about one issue or another. But I think on the whole, you know, it's a very long time since we've had a population level or population wide campaign in this country around HIV. The last one was 1987. I think that anybody who's their early 30s or above will remember the tombstones, will remember the icebergs. But as I said, at the kind of top of the piece, that, you know, the condition has not gone away.
No.
It's very definitely still out there, and anybody can be impacted on by it.
Yeah, do you think, though, that there's a difference? Because in the early days of HIV/AIDS, it was seen as a death sentence, end of, that's it. But lives of the people with HIV, living with HIV and AIDS, have changed, haven't they, since we first became aware of the disease back in the 80s?
Absolutely, they have. I mean, the really good news is that we do have very effective treatments available for HIV. And I think that if you actually look at some of the figures that the Health Protection Agency themselves have released this week, of the people who are actually accessing kind of HIV specialist centres across the whole of the UK, 70% of people with diagnosed HIV are accessing those treatments. They're living very healthy lives in the majority of cases. You know, and I think that their life expectancy is some information that I was reading recently suggesting that for men who are on treatment, their life expectancy may be reduced by about 6 years as compared with their peers. So that's the good news.
That's not a lot, is it?
It's not. I think that these treatments are very, very successful. But what I wanted to say, Tricia, is that that's the good news.
Yeah.
The other side of that coin is that I think that there's a lot of people who read in the media around the treatments, and the treatments are not dealt with desperately effectively in terms of how people's awareness is raised around them, particularly in newspapers. So they believe that it's all very easy. It's all very, they don't have to worry about it anymore. I can absolutely tell you 100% that it's like, once you have HIV, you've got it for life. Once you've started treatment, you have to continue taking that treatment for life. The treatments are becoming easier in some respects to manage. There's one now that we have, which is just one tablet a day, but they come with a whole host of side effects.
Oh, like what?
Everything, you know, the regular ones include nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, sleep interruption, fatigue. More extreme ones, which are kind of seen with some of the treatments that have been around with for a little bit longer, are things like lipodystrophy, which is basically a redistribution of fat around the body. So you can get very strong side effects with some of these treatments. You have to take them every day to make sure that they're effective. And I think that one of the things Glenn and I were just actually talking off air before we joined you, one of the things that sets HIV apart for me in terms of being managed as a long-term condition is that because it suppresses the immune system, it attacks your own body, it leaves you open to all sorts of other infections. So one of the things that we're seeing at the moment is that a lot of people with HIV who may be infected also with something like hepatitis C, managing the treatments for both of those and
what
the way
nightmare.
That they interact with one another can be very, very difficult for people. The one thing that I'd want to say is it's great news that the treatment is available, but I really want to say to people, the best thing for you to do is to be aware of HIV, try not to get it in the first place, because although the treatment is there,
it ain't fun.
It's not that much fun.
No. Now, you mentioned Glenn. I should just tell listeners, we've also got Glenn Wallace, who's listening in. For those of you who watch Hollyoaks, Glenn, hi, welcome. Tell us about your character.
Hi, Tricia. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
I've come in. I've sort of been on Hollyoaks on and off over the last year. I shot sort of 12 episodes for them. And it's one of those stories you hear where, you know, only ever was a short contract and then they wrote me in for a year. And before I joined them, I had a meeting with them January, February of this year. And they said, you know, we want to bring your character Maliki back in, but we want to give him HIV. How do you feel about that?
Maliki's a straight guy, isn't he?
Maliki is. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why they decided to do it. Chris is Maliki's brother, who's been in the show for about 2 or 3 years, who's a cross-dressing bisexual.
And everyone would expect him to get it, wouldn't they?
Well, I think that's the obvious choice. And I think if you look at the figures that Ewan's just been talking about, the number of heterosexuals now who are being infected by HIV, that increase, we can't really ignore that. And I think what the producers have done have taken an opportunity to not play the obvious card and actually look at the statistics and look at the figures and say, well, you know, we're not an educational show by any means, but what we do have, because of the demographic that we have, I think we have an opportunity along with the story writers to actually tell this story with an emotional context.
So how does Maliki contract HIV?
the relationship itself with himself and Chris has always been quite... It's brothers, you know. They're sort of argue and fight a bit out. And there was one situation we decided there was a blood drive at the university. I was staying with him at Halls and to prove who was the bigger man, we went to give blood. And so Chris was able to get on his soapbox about, you know, a young bisexual. How could he not give blood because of the inherent dangers? But someone like Malachi, someone like his brother who can go around and sleep with whoever he wants... You know, that he can give blood.
Good point, and, yeah.
Yeah, a very valid point, you know. And so what happened was then Malachi received a phone call from the blood donor centre to bring him in to have a conversation, and that's when he found out that he had HIV.
And did they actually say, do you say in a series how he picked it up, or is it from sleeping around? Or
No, it is. Yeah, we haven't actually covered that per se. What I mean is, that happened, we're going back sort of May, June time.
But that's been left open, sort of thing.
It has been left open, but I think through the storylines, everyone knows that oh, God love Malachi, he's not the most intelligent bloke in the world. You know, he's sort of... He's a builder by trade. He works, you know, sort of cash in hand. He's not the most educated. He thinks it's okay to go out on a Thursday night, have a couple of pints, pull a girl and sleep with her, and then Friday night, Saturday night, do the next thing and not actually
that's pretty widespread, isn't it?
It's not
unusual behaviour, really.
No, it's not. And I think that's probably what we need to tackle then, is to get that education out there. Because I think... Malachi was quite fortunate in that Chris he'd actually been through an HIV scare earlier in the year. You could also argue as a bisexual man, he's probably more aware of the consequences of his actions. Malachi actually had some support from Chris in having to come to terms with this. You know?
And did you have to do some research as to the issues, to the emotions, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, whilst Malachi may not be the most educated, I think my role as the actor taking on this storyline, I feel that I need to do as much as I can. And and that's a case of, you know, speaking to people like you and people at the Terence Higgins Trust, researching on the internet, watching films like Philadelphia, speaking to nurses. A friend of mine from Belfast, his mother's a nurse who works with people with HIV, and just trying to build up the picture. To allow me to sort of take on this role, you know.
Well, that's a good place in where we can bring in Craig. Now, Craig's a 37-year-old man who has HIV. I hate having to dwell on sexuality, but a heterosexual man. Craig, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Tricia.
Can you tell us how you contracted HIV?
HIV doesn't come with a label, so we don't know exactly for sure where it came from. I had a road traffic accident in 1985 and had a blood transfusion then.
Right.
So it could have possibly come from then. But as a youngster, I did sleep around a bit, so it could have come from then as well. So we don't exactly know where it exactly came from.
And having talked to, been listening to you and talking about the drug, you know, therapy ain't no fun, what does it involve for you?
I've been on HIV medication from day one from being diagnosed, which I was diagnosed in 1994. So in those days, the drugs were very, very poor compared to the drugs now. And they often used to fail. And once HIV drugs failed, you can't really go on it again. So
When you say fail, how did you know they'd failed?
Because you're getting poorly and the HIV is getting strong inside your body. So it's not working.
How did you find out that you were HIV positive, and when and how?
I was in hospital with pneumonia. I come back from holiday in 1993 with a cough, and it didn't get better. I put me for medication, and I still didn't get better. So the doctor suggested I went for a chest X-ray, which showed I had pneumonia. They admitted me to hospital, pumped me full of drugs, and I got better. Within 3 months, the pneumonia was back, but worse. They gave me the same drugs, and it didn't get better. So I was going downhill fast. The chest doctor gave me 2 weeks to live. At that point, I was desperate to find out what was wrong. HIV was mentioned, but because I didn't see myself as being at risk, I said it can't be that. They thought it could have been cancer, so I had various tests of cancer. It wasn't that. And then it was getting so close to the 2 weeks, I said, give me an HIV test. In those days, it took 2 weeks for the results to come through.
Oh, gosh.
So I was getting really worried about that. But it came back, I was HIV positive. And at the time, I was glad, actually, because we knew what was wrong. Because, you know, when you've been told you're going to die, and you're going to die soon, you want to know what's wrong.
And what about you? Do you have a partner or a family? Or I'm just wondering how they reacted to finding out you were HIV positive.
My parents were actually with me when I got my diagnosis.
Gosh.
My dad was all right, but my mum was very upset, crying, and had to leave the room because she was so upset.
Was there stigma that came with the fact that, did you immediately think, oh, people are going to think I'm gay because it's seen as, inverted commas, a gay disease?
Not really, no. The only difference was they moved me into a side ward from the main hospital, and they kept putting infectious diseases stickers on the door, which I didn't like, and I kept taking them off, which upset them.
But for you, have you found any sort of discrimination, or, you know, do people react to you differently once they know, if they know?
At first, I told all my friends and family, everyone knew. I wasn't proud of the fact, but I wanted people to know.
Yeah.
To be honest, all my friends were great. I had no negative reactions at all. I've had prejudice against me. I was a captain of a pool team, and one of the guys had a right go at me one night and accused me of being a lying AIDS freak and things like that in the pub. Which weren't very nice.
And as far as the drugs are concerned, again, we heard Ewan talking about the side effects. The drugs you're on now, do they affect your day-to-day life? I mean, how many tablets do you have to take?
I take 21 tablets a day.
21?
Yep.
At specific times?
7 for the HIV.
Sorry?
7 for the HIV.
Right.
All the rest are for side effects of all drugs.
So the 7 drugs that you take for HIV create the side effects that you have to take all the other tablets for?
Once you've been on a medication and you've got some of the side effects, are permanent side effects, I've got a problem called peripheral neuropathy, which basically kills nerve endings in your hands and your legs and your feet.
Ah.
And you're in extreme pain. And I'm on epileptic drugs to calm the nerve endings down in my legs, and I've got that for life.
That's something that comes with, I know from personal experience, with chemotherapy as well. I'm playing with that one. What other things? What other side effects?
I've got high blood pressure, so I'm on medication. That's also caused by all medications. Right. I have lipodystrophy. I have a rare kind of migraine. I'm on medications for that.
Gosh.
It's just ongoing.
Yeah, so as Ewan said, that's something you have to consider. What about working? Has that been possible?
I haven't worked since my diagnosis. I was fired shortly after my diagnosis.
Because of your diagnosis?
Yes.
And did you think of pursuing discrimination, or did you think it would take more energy than you had to give?
I went to the CAB at the time, and they said I would win, I would get my job back, but I had to be prepared for headline news, national, not local. And at that stage, just found out you're HIV positive. That's the last thing I wanted. So I said nothing.
Now, you volunteer for THT, don't you, the Terence Higgins Trust?
Yeah, I do.
Has that given you, or what does it give you, knowing that you can give something back?
I don't see it as giving something back. I see it as if I can stop one person from contracting HIV, it's worthwhile me doing it. And that's the sole reason I do it.
So at the moment, your general health's okay? Would you say, with all the side effects and everything else, do you do anything? Do you have any diet? Do you have any extra strategies?
I was a chef, so diet's never been a problem, really. So I'm quite good at cooking. You don't forget that skill. So diet's always been okay. My doctor will tell you my health's fantastic because the results from the latest tests are really good. But to be honest, I don't feel great.
You don't?
I don't feel great at all, no.
Let's come back to you, Ewan. And you know, we've had a graphic explanation from Craig about the pills and the side effects. It's amazing, isn't it? 7 pills for the actual HIV and all the rest for the side effects. One of the things I wanted to do is clarify the difference between HIV and AIDS, because there's still a lot of confusion.
Okay. This links into so much of what we've been talking about today, Trish, and I think that one of the things is that certainly in the UK we've kind of really sort of pretty much stopped talking about AIDS. AIDS is a medical term. It describes a group of what we kind of call opportunistic infections, which are kind of quite a whole bunch of quite rare diseases, which most people in the country with a healthy immune system would never be at risk of getting. So there's kind of particular types of pneumonia, particular types of cancer, that kind of thing. And collectively, they are medically described as AIDS.
Right.
There's also something else in terms of how we kind of measure where people are with their HIV. HIV attacks a particular type of blood cell, and we can count that type of blood cell. And for a doctor to actually kind of say, well, at a certain point, when you have a certain number of these cells per microliter of blood, you actually have an AIDS diagnosis. That is something right. that used to happen a lot, whereas now we don't tend to talk about that nearly quite as much as we used to.
Is that because medication is holding people in the HIV area?
Well, yes, it is. I mean, I think that one of the reasons that it's happened is that precisely for the reason that you asked the question, that actually people are confused about, well, what is HIV and what is AIDS? Are they the same thing? Or are they different?
Yeah.
And I think that that's one of the reasons why we've kind of potentially stopped using AIDS quite as much as we used to. What we tend to talk about now is that the exact same kind of point that I was talking about, I don't want to confuse people by going too much into kind of the science of it, but at that point where people once upon a time probably would have been told that they had AIDS, we now talk about them from the point when they actually go on to treatment of having symptomatic HIV.
Right.
Before they go on to treatment, then they're known as having asymptomatic or no symptom HIV. And that's probably, I think, in terms of just trying to help people understand it, that's probably a little bit more of a helpful way of describing it. Because, as I say, AIDS is something which is actually quite a medical definition.
Right. I wanted to come back to you just briefly, Glenn. Have you had any feedback about your character and what
Yes, so far the feedback's been great. I mean, obviously, you know, we're coming up to World AIDS Day,
and
there has been quite a bit of press. I've been working with the Terence Higgins Trust. There's a lot of sort of stuff out there. Interviews that I've done with THT have sort of commended us on once again tackling this issue and bringing it to the forefront. I mean, you're sort of talking Mark Fowler and EastEnders was 1988. You know, that's 20 years ago. That's two generations of children that have grown up and not necessarily understanding the implications of their actions, you know. I mean, I was 12 at the time? quick mathematics. I was 12, and I remember sort of the front page news that it was, and it seems to have been pushed to the back burner.
Absolutely.
And I think if we have an opportunity once again to bring this to the forefront, I think we should.
And Ewan, for you, the last question, the most important question, the overriding message for World AIDS Day, would you say?
Well, the theme for World AIDS Day this year, Tricia, is protect and respect. And basically
Good
what
way,
that's
yeah.
saying is kind of like, you know about HIV, know how to protect yourself from getting it, respect yourself and respect your sexual partners. And it's through those kind of messages, it's through increasing people's awareness, as Glenn has been talking about, that we really want to try and see the number of people diagnosed with HIV start to come down. So think about it. It can affect everybody, as we were saying much earlier, and protect and respect. Keep that in your mind, even if you're going out for a few drinks on a Friday night.
Thank you so much. Well, thank you, Ewan. Once again, Ewan Jenkins from the Terence Higgins Trust office on the Wirral. Glenn Wallace, more power to your character. May it go from strength to strength. And Craig, thank you too for joining us on the line. We've been talking about HIV in the run-up to World AIDS Day tomorrow. You're listening to Talk to Tricia here on City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
Talk to Tricia on City Talk 105.9.
Well, thank you all of you. Just to remind you, I've been talking to actor Glenn Wallace, Malachi on Hollyoaks, a character with HIV. Craig, who's been talking about his personal experiences. And of course, as ever, Ewan Jenkins, our thanks to you. From the Terence Higgins Trust, I just wanted to give people the website address. It's www.tht.org.uk. www.tht.org.uk if you want to find out any more information about World AIDS Day, which is tomorrow. That's it from me for this week. Have a fantastic week. You're listening to Talk to Tricia here on City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
Listen and log on to the voice of Liverpool. City Talk 105.9.